Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite intercontinental football podcast. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And joining me all the way across the water, all the way in San Diego, is Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yep, the sun's shining. The heat wave's over. I'm happy. Padres baseball season starts this week, mate. I'll be there. I'm going. We got Detroit Tigers at Petco Park Friday. Look at me. I'm so embraced in the culture, mate. Loving it. Haven't quite got into March Madness, though, I've got to admit. Like, I've tried. I can't care yet. I'm trying, though.
I think what's interesting is that, like, because we didn't grow up within the, like, university and college system, it's, like, quite hard to buy in. Like, whereas with a professional sports team, you can kind of jump in at any given moment and kind of start to work it out and kind of not have the allegiances already pre-built. Whereas, obviously, for a lot of people, that allegiance comes first and foremost. So, I get it. I do like the idea of just loads of games on the screens and, like, four different screens at any given time. That's very
fun. Yeah. Like, I do like that wherever I go at the moment, there's just basketball on, and like, it's like everyone seems really into it. The games have seemed pretty intense. Like, I have watched some of it. I just don't really care on the outcome. I haven't heard of half of the teams, but I get it.
Yeah, I mean, and look, as we say, it's a good time for sports season, right? Like, there's a lot of things going on as we build up. And obviously, we've got the World Cup on the horizon. This is the final international break of the year. Now, we were going to look at doing something ahead of these playoffs, but we realised that the timings didn't quite work. And by the time that this comes out, the playoffs are going to start and things. So actually, I've been on a different podcast. If you're really interested in the World Cup qualifiers, especially the European ones, I went on the World Cup After Dark podcast with Austin Miller and Amit, and it was really, really fun. We had a real breakdown, hour and a half through all of these European games. I'm off to Prague first thing tomorrow morning to go and watch Ireland play against the Czech Republic or Czechia. So I'm very, very excited about this international break. But what we're going to do is next week, once the qualifiers are over, so that will be on Tuesday night, we're going to record on Wednesday, and it will come out later on Wednesday than first thing in the morning. But we'll rank the World Cup groups when they're done in their entirety. So there's going to be an episode that comes out a little bit later, about 12 hours later than it would do normally next week, in order to look through those and have our go at the World Cup and do something World Cup-y. But we're going to do something different today, something a bit more evergreen, something that's going to be in there. And actually, as we come towards this kind of run-in of the season, I always feel, Dean, that especially in England, the Carabao Cup final kind of marks the start of the end of the season. And I know this was a running joke on Ranks for many a year. Where does the start of the season end and the middle of the season start and all of the rest of it? But it feels like we're right into the run-in when we come back after this one. So today we're going to do something different. We're going to look at some players who are under pressure, either from performances, either in terms of where their futures lie with the World Cup in mind for some of them. There's a lot to play for still from an individual perspective as well as from a team perspective. That's what we're going to be digging into today.
Yeah, absolutely. If you are interested in our thoughts on the Carabao Cup final, please do head over to the Patreon. We broke that down in proper detail on Monday. I did a raw take on it straight after the final whistle on Sunday. We got some great messages in from our listeners on the Patreon, on the Rank Squad. So thanks to everybody that got involved with that one. So don't forget, you can still get free trials too. So go over there, have a listen and see what you think. Yeah.
Links in the description as ever. But we'll get stuck into today's episode for now. And Dean, you're going to pick five players from the Premier League. I'm going to pick five players from around Europe. We're going to go one and one. So we keep this from all of us talking all of the time.
Yeah.
But we're going to get stuck in at five and do a proper ranking again.
We are, yeah. So, obviously, like, we're in a weird period of the season. So it's international break and stuff. And we thought, right, let's, I was trying to think last night, what is interesting right now? Who's under pressure? What's up for grabs? Like, should we talk about who's going to win the competitions? Obviously, Sam and Doogie did a great episode at the end of the last week too. And it was pretty player centric in terms of what's going well and all those sorts of things. But I thought, hang on, let's turn this on its head a little bit. Who are the players under pressure right now? Like, who's got something at stake or the weight of the world on their shoulders? We're going to put forward five each. Mine will be Premier League centric. Jack's, of course, will be from, I assume, around Europe, but who knows, could be anywhere in the world with Jack. And at my number five, I have got something that is a different type of pressure, Jack. Because at number five, the player under pressure, I've gone with Archie Gray. Because, okay. You know, Tottenham are in big trouble, right? They're in a real slump. They are stuck 1 point outside of the relegation zone. And the general consensus here is that with 7 games to go, this team don't look like they have the mentality, the DNA, if you like, for a battle at the wrong end of the table. But if there's anyone that does look like they could help get a team out of it, it seems like it might be Archie Gray. And by that, I don't mean that Archie Gray is going to score a hat trick that keeps Tottenham in the Premier League. But of course, what we mean is that there's a player here who is still in the early stages of career. He's 20 now. He's predicted to have a great career ahead of him. And he's had to play all over the place in defence and midfield across this season just to help Tottenham out, to try and get them out of a hole. But he finds himself in a situation which he really shouldn't be finding himself in a relegation scrap. But he does to me feel, and this is unfair on him, like he's a young star carrying a big traditional six team in this relegation battle. And I think having an over-reliance at such a young age, as I say, is unfair. But because he's one of their only dependable performers, I do think that there's a lot of pressure on Archie Gray to help get Tottenham out of this. As I say, like, this is different to the typical type of pressure that you'll be thinking about right now. And of course, we'll get into the more traditional types of pressure across this episode. But I tell you what, Archie Gray's future is on the line here. Because also, if Tottenham are relegated, there'll be a fair few people who think, well, Archie Gray will stick with us. But will he? Does he have to? I think there'll be a sense of loyalty from him that would want to, but I also know for a fact that other teams are going to want to sign Archie Gray. And that if there's anyone actually, if you were to go through the Tottenham squad and think, right, they're going down, let's start picking them apart, who do we want? There's actually not that many that you would want based on what they've given this season. And Archie Gray might be top of the list. So actually, he's one of the only ones who's come out of this season well. But he's also one of the only players who can make sure that they stay in this division.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting because obviously he's still 20 years old. And I think listening to quite a lot of the Tottenham discourse from their fan base, reading a lot of it online in a different kind of way in the last couple of weeks, he does remain the one player that fans seem completely united on. And I think that what we saw in those two games against Liverpool and Atleti with that partnership between him and Pape Matar starting to show that they were quite good at scrapping and kind of fighting for life in some ways for this Spurs side. Now, I don't think that necessarily translated to the weekend. And when Spurs were expected to step on a game and get on top, there was less of that kind of midfield control or at least them the kind of bombing around and putting out fires because they were asked to do something slightly different. And I do think it's a little bit unfair on Archie Gray that he's been kind of tasked with this role. But equally, as someone who was, you know, tapped as a future captain, who was tapped as a future England captain when he was coming through the age groups, who was tapped as a future Leeds captain, you know, obviously before he made that transfer, I do find it interesting that, you know, he's kind of taken this on and taken it with really good faith. He puts himself about. He's clearly one of the few players who's still got his head up and is still very much fighting for this. I think this is a good pressure. And I'm glad you've included him because we're going to speak a lot today about pressures on players in different ways and in different kind of situations that are either they have to prove that they fit with the club that they're currently at, or they have to prove that their career is not on the wane, or their career is in a different place to where their club is at. All of those things matter, right? But I think for this one, this is genuinely a positive pressure for Archie Gray. And there's not much that Spurs fans are being positive about Spurs about because of the situation they find themselves in right now. But he has this capacity, and that pressure on his shoulders hangs there in a sense of being like, right, can I be the person to actually lift this club out of the mire right now? Because if I can, that's incredible to be able to lift a club that's been a traditional top six club for some time and take them out of a situation that they don't feel comfortable in whatsoever. Like, and there is a lot of players who are kind of really kind of shirking that responsibility, are stepping away from it, are not being the ones to stand up and be counted, including a lot of his senior professionals, a lot of the senior leaders in that dressing room. It has a real chance, I think, to make Archie Gray as a player as well, if he can kind of take this team by the scruff of the neck. And so I'm glad we've started on a kind of positive for him, even if it's in a negative situation for his team.
Yeah, exactly. A strange way to wangle pressure. But at number five, I thought it was quite fitting and kind of reflects the situation that Tottenham are in right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a very, very interesting one. All right, should we go down a different path for my number five? Because this is where I've put Kylian Mbappe. Now, I don't think anyone is under any illusions that Kylian Mbappe is an incredibly good footballer. He scored 38 goals and picked up 6 assists in 35 games for Real Madrid this season. But one of these continuing storylines, despite the fact that Kylian Mbappe has continued to pump numbers out, has been how this side sets up. And actually, if you go back just a couple of weeks, you go back to Arbeloa taking over, there were a lot of question marks on what this side was and where they were going and what the kind of outlook was going to be for them. Now, whether that was obviously falling out of the Copa del Rey to Albacete, whether that was, you know, the games in the league that they ended up losing to Getafe and Osasuna. The Osasuna game was the last time until this weekend in the derby that we saw Kylian Mbappe in La Liga in a Real Madrid shirt. And it really didn't work. Now, it wasn't a particularly brilliant kind of performance full stop from Real Madrid, but Osasuna were very good at containing what they were trying to do. And we saw this Mbappe-Vinicius front two there, and it was a little bit all over the place. Now, in the weeks that have come since then, obviously they lost to Getafe without him. But also, then you see the 2-1 turnaround win against Celta Vigo, where Valverde scores that last-minute goal. We see the two incredible performances against Manchester City to beat them in both legs of that Champions League round of 16 tie. We see a 4-1 win over Elche, and then he comes off the bench in this game against Atleti, which was just a really good game of football full stop, right? Like, it was just a great game between two teams going at each other and having it off, and I really, really enjoyed it as a fixture. But actually, in that time where Mbappe has been absent, and I would probably extend this to include Jude Bellingham as a kind of wider conversation as well. In that time, we've seen Arbeloa work out a system that seems to have put Madrid back on a relatively sensible path. Now, it involves split strikers with Vinicius Jr. kind of drifting off the left-hand side of a 4-4-2, if you will, and Brahim Diaz, who is a more naturally right-sided player, drifting off the right-hand side of that. Now, Fede Valverde is effectively playing as an auxiliary winger / fullback / central midfielder because he's capable of doing everything at once. We've seen Thiago Pitar come into the middle and be really, really impressive in his ball regulation. And I think more than anything, we've seen Vinny Jr. pick up a couple of games by the scruff of the neck and be like, I'm going to be the deciding factor here. Whether that be the City game in the second leg, whether that be the Atleti game where he scores a brilliant winner in that game. I think that we've seen a structure from Arbeloa that feels more sensible than perhaps what we've seen before. And look, it's not necessarily rocket science. You've got someone who's able to recycle the ball a little bit more, but also you've just got square pegs in square holes. And it's worked for the most part in the last couple of weeks. It's been a really good fortnight for Real Madrid. Now, Kylian Mbappe comes back into this side as obviously, you know, the main goal threat, 38 goals, as we say, this season. And this isn't pressure in terms of, do you think Kylian Mbappe is a good footballer? Do you think Kylian Mbappe is, you know, good enough to play for Real Madrid? None of those things. But I think that there is a pressure on him now to show that he can adapt to this system, which has showed that it can work in a couple of big, big games, at big, big moments, whether that be a Madrid derby or a Champions League tie, being able to step up and actually work in a front two with Vinny Jr. Now, look, I'm not going to doubt the ability of Kylian Mbappe, right? Like, and I'm not going to doubt that he can adapt to a system and make it stick. We saw him make that move into center forward and be able to score an immense amount of goals for this Real Madrid side, even when they felt a little bit dysfunctional in many different ways. But I think that the fact that Vinny has kind of stepped up in the last couple of weeks and been like, yo, I'm still here, you know, I'm still the guy that can decide ties. I'm still the man that can step up in the Champions League and deliver for this club like I have done for a number of years. How are you going to fit in other players around me? I think that puts an interesting amount of pressure on Mbappe to step in and be that right-sided role of the forward line. And then, you know, to take that point a little bit further, I think it puts a pressure on Jude Bellingham when he comes back into this team to either try and perform the role that Thiago Pitarque has done, or that they're going to have to shift this team around in order to find a space for him within it. And it's a pressure on Arbeloa. But we're picking out players here. I think Mbappe is the one that people are most expectant of, that he's going to be able to slip into that role that Brahim Diaz has played really, really well, I think, in the last couple of weeks, and step forward and be able to propel this team forward and for it all to work when he's in the team again. And I think that that's a really interesting type of pressure on him, because it might define where the club go when it comes to this summer. And I think that Mbappe will stay. But the question is then going to be, what do they do with other contracts, and like, how do they sort out other people? There's a big pressure to perform there to show that this can work.
There is, yeah. I mean, I've seen this narrative coming back to the surface that Mbappe kills Real Madrid just like he killed PSG. And it's talking about the fact that, you know, a superstar name and a superstar player doesn't necessarily mean that a team functions best when they are in it. Now, obviously, Mbappe will definitely have his own views on his own contributions towards PSG and Real Madrid being the best version of themselves. But there are people that genuinely feel this. I saw that there was a report, I can't remember which publication it was, but they were describing Mbappe's recent performance and were talking about he lounges on the Bernabeu lawn. He's a player that needs to rethink his attitude. And people are starting to kind of expect a lot more from him. And obviously his injury problems recently mean that we don't really know what our expectations of him can be in this moment. But equally, the message from Mbappe himself is, you know, a lot of lies have been told about my injury and he just wants to get on with things, right? This is a massive time for him. You've got, you know, the business end of the season and a World Cup whereby he's lead striker for a team that's expected to have a good chance of winning the World Cup. So, yeah, there's definitely pressure on Mbappe. He's obviously thrived off pressure since he was 16, 17 years old and burst onto the scene, but that has changed. He has now made the full evolution from rising star to superstar, and now he needs to fulfill the traits that are expected of somebody that remains at that level.
Yeah, I think it's really, really intriguing. And obviously he's going to go off on France national team duty now after recovering from an injury. Arbeloa has already said, hopefully he gets more minutes with France, returns 100%. He said he's feeling, you know, good and strong in his knees, but 100% and ready to come back. Obviously there's going to be pressure from a Real Madrid perspective that he does come back fit and firing as well, because they've just, you know, left him out for a couple of big games to try and get him ready for the season end if he goes off on international duty and doesn't come back in the right kind of health. And look, that doesn't necessarily, that's about kind of muscular stuff, I think, as much as anything else. If he gets cleaned out and something happens to him, obviously we never want to see players get injured. That's not the same thing. That's a different situation. But actually, if it's something to do with the recovery from this, etc., then there's going to be more pot shots thrown, and that's a pressure within itself. Who have you got at number four, Dean?
At number four, I've got Phil Foden. I'm not really sure what's happened to him, Jack. And this is
a Phil Foden these days? Who knows?
I don't know. What I do know is that it's contract year for him. His deal runs out at Man City in 2027, and they are in the process of drawing up the next contract offer and what that will be. Now, you would have anticipated a couple of years ago that Phil Foden's next contract would be a blockbuster one, that there would be a clamour of clubs looking to sign him if one wasn't agreed. The expectation with him has always been that he would be a one-man club, one-club man. But ultimately, where is he right now? I do think he'll get a new contract, But word out of Man City is that it's not going to be with any significant pay rise. It's like, yeah, we'll keep you. You're Phil Foden. You're one of our own. You're still good. And you still definitely can contribute to what we want to do here. 25 years old, maybe the best years are still to come. But over the past 2 years, that wouldn't really... the signs aren't there, are they? So there was basically a period of this season, November going into December, when Phil Foden seemed to come back to life. He got 2 goals against Leeds, 2 against Fulham, 1 goal against Sunderland, 1 goal against Crystal Palace. That came on the 14th of December. He hasn't scored a Premier League goal since. He's got one assist against Fulham, of course, since then. So that's his only goal contribution since December, was an assist against Fulham. Now, this isn't the sort of form we would expect from somebody who is a game changer, who is considered by many to be the most natural, gifted talent English football has produced in a long, long time. And he hasn't even been trusted to make an impact in their Champions League campaign when they really needed it. Their last 2 games, Real Madrid, the crunch clash to see if they stayed in it. Both legs on the bench, unused sub. What's happened to Phil Foden? And what's he going to do now? Carabao Cup final at the weekend. What's his role? Last minute sub. More so Cherky can get a round of applause than anything. Very strange situation, mate. And this is going to take self-motivation. He's obviously been on a decline since the Euros, when he obviously didn't have personally a great time of things, and he got quite a lot of stick because of his lack of output. I do understand why that might have got into his head, and he might have found the fallout to that difficult. But we just haven't seen him the same ever since.
No, we very much haven't either. It has felt like a really kind of tumultuous time for Phil Foden. And also, I think the added pressure to this one is that when he wasn't able to perform for England, and look, there was a lot of people who were in similar boats, and I think that it's unfair to tar Foden with one brush and not necessarily use it for a lot of other players who also didn't have particularly good tournaments. But the accusation that's often been leveled at Phil Foden is outside of Pep Guardiola's system, he isn't able to operate with the same kind of freedom, the same kind of guile, and that he's, you know, a system player. Now, I think personally, that's pretty harsh, right? And I think that you've never really been given the opportunity outside of international football, which is less complex, full stop, more simplistic, and actually tends to be a bit looser, that you maybe would get him to be able to shine in different systems and under different managers, etc. Fine. But the question is going to be with Phil Foden, you know, if he, you know, doesn't show up or he's not being utilized for this City side, maybe he doesn't show up is a little bit harsh here. But if he's not being utilized, surely at this point in your career, you'd look to kind of rebuild your career elsewhere as a key man for another side, you know, step outside your comfort zone and be that guy and fulfill your potential. So the pressure is there not only on him performing in order to, you know, potentially have an outside shot at the World Cup squad. I think it's unlikely at this point, if I'm being perfectly honest, but also to kind of put yourself back into the main plans at City. But then also, if you don't do that, what's your next move and where do you go that would allow you to showcase the ability that you have and become a key man somewhere else? That's a double-edged sword in so many different ways. And I think it adds to this pressure that's now kind of starting to heap upon him.
Yeah, absolutely. A very, very strange time. It should be an exciting time for him. He should be trophy hunting. He should be leading the charge for City to go and catch Arsenal. He should be putting himself right in the frame for the England squad. Look, he has made Thomas Tuchel's 35-man squad that's just been named. But at this stage, mate, I can't be sure that Phil Foden is going to make the cut. So let's see what he can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, we're going to take a little break there. We come back on the other side. Plenty more players to get stuck into. Make sure you stick with us here on Ranks FC. Welcome back to Ranks FC. Jack Collins and Dean Jones with you, discussing players under pressure at this crunch point in the season, either for their clubs, either for their contracts, either for a move. Lots of different reasonings for why these players are under pressure. But Then I want to go to Italy. Okay. And I'd like to talk about Rafael Leao, who is having a bit of a strange season in many ways.
This is a good one. I like this. I like this a lot.
So Rafael Leao has 10 goals and 2 assists in 24 games for Milan this season, which is not bad. It's a goal contribution every 2 games. It's a goal contribution. You know, he's kind of in that kind of space under a goal contribution every 2 in terms of the actual minutes. But there have been question marks over Rafael Leao for a little while now. And part of this is the fact that Max Allegri's system at Milan doesn't really use wingers, right? Like, he's been playing as a central figure, as a kind of number 9 in this team. Whereas we know that Rafael Leao's best work has come kind of drifting out into those wide areas, taking on players when he feels kind of unplayable at times. And for someone, you know, we talk about natural talents, and we were talking about it there with Phil Foden, who just felt like they were, you know, destined to become absolute world beaters. Leao, I think, was as close as we saw as someone who we were like, absolute guarantee, sure thing. He has just all of the talent in the world. And when you put him in these positions with his one-on-one ability, there's no way that he's not going to be playing for a team who are desperate to reinvigorate their wing core at the very, very top of the game. But I think at 26 years old, there's still huge questions over whether Rafael Leao fits within this current iteration of Milan, whether they're able to get the best out of him when Allegri is in charge. And, you know, bear in mind, this is an Allegri side who are second in Serie A, who he's solidified them, sorted out the midfield. They don't look like the mess that they were last season. I think that if Allegri wants to stay, Milan will keep Allegri on, right? Like, I don't think this is going to change next season unless there is a kind of shock move from a massive club to bring in Max Allegri elsewhere. And but I know there's been Real Madrid links. I think that would be wild, if I'm perfectly honest. So I think that there's probably a level of this where we expect him to be at Milan next season. What does that mean for Rafa Leao? Because, you know, you're watching all of the differing kind of places that are speaking about this within the Italian press. I saw an interview with Andrei Shevchenko saying the other day he's not a center forward. He's not playing in his natural position. In some matches he's done okay, and others not very much. Maybe you have to give him time, but actually he needs to be willing to go in that role and help the team out. And you have to keep kind of plugging away, and your attitude has to be bang on. Now, obviously, there was that little fallout with him and Christian Pulisic in the game against Atalanta. I don't think that necessarily that's a major fallout, but Allegri's agent, you know, came out a couple of weeks ago and basically said he's not contributing much. It's obvious for everyone to see. Yes, he's an important player. He must be supported to the end of the year, and then we'll see. And you're like, Oh, I don't like all of this very much. Now, there's also, you know, a kind of situation with his contract, which is currently until 2028. He has 150 million euro release clause. I don't think anyone is going to pay that right now. But if Milan don't feel like Leao is doing the job that they need him to do in the center of the park, and they're going to stick with that formation, he's in a very weird spot where I'm sure that, look, someone will come and shell out 60, 70 million for Rafa Leao because the upside is so big. And considering how many teams are crying out for new blood, especially in that left wing position, I think that you'll find someone who's willing to kind of put that on the line. I think he has a kind of moment here to really kind of showcase why people were so hot on him as a youngster and why Milan should be doing everything they can to keep him and actually get him into the best position for him to succeed because it benefits them. And right now, I just can't really see that happening with the way that they're set up and the way that he's playing. Yes, it's, you know, it's a decent goal return this season, but I think it's 2 in his last 9 in all competitions. And we're seeing him kind of in and out of the team at times, on the bench in some games where you really wouldn't expect him to. He's obviously had a few injuries in terms of muscle problems this year. I just wonder if Milan are thinking that they might just gamble on moving forward without him. And that leaves him in a funny old spot. So I think there is pressure on Rafa Leao.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, there are definitely a few more whispers now about would Milan be ready to listen to offers for him at the end of the season. The problem is that, you know, whenever there's been transfer rumours around Leao before, you'd been talking about a £100 million player, and you're not getting close to that at the moment. You know, the reason I'm surprised to hear you talk about Rafa Leao is because I so often forget about him these days. Like, literally, he's a shadow of the player that he was becoming. And this has always been there because he's always been inconsistent to some degree. But he's bordering on becoming, I'm going to say irrelevant, but that seems a bit too harsh. But like replaceable, I think is more the case. He used to feel still, even though he would have games where he ghosted, he kind of felt like you still always wanted him. And now I feel like, because of the way Milan have been building out and because of his lack of output, he is replaceable now in this system. And that's a really weird place to be. And I don't know if he's got it within him to lift his levels at this club.
I'm a bit stuck with it because the amount of talent is still absolutely absurd to me. And I think that if he's released in the right system, where somewhere where he feels comfortable and confident and ready to kind of step in as the main guy or one of the main guys in an attack that's functioning a bit better, then suddenly you'll just see an explosion. And we'll be talking in October about the fact that Rafa Leão moved to, I don't know, Arsenal, and suddenly he looks like an absolute world beater and things are all working out. Why did Milan sell him? They can't score goals, et cetera, et cetera. Like, and I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. But equally, I feel like you're getting to a point with this Milan side, and especially if they are going to continue with Allegri, that you're kind of looking at it and thinking, is there any point you being here? Like, these should be your prime years. You're coming up to 27, 28. This should be where you're taking the world by storm. This is the point where we thought you were going to be a Ballon d'Or contender. And instead, there's that kind of languishing sense about this. You know, we're talking about Portugal side. You spoke about France earlier, but a Portugal team that should be thinking about the quarter semi-finals of the World Cup. And I don't think he's going to start. Yeah. And I also think that that's kind of reasonable from Roberto Martinez in terms of what he does. Now, that doesn't mean that he's not better than a load of these other players, but are they going to trust him to be the guy in these big games? I don't know at this point. And that feels really weird. This should be the point where he was kind of seen as the guy who was going to take the crown off Cristiano Ronaldo. He was going to be the next guy to step up and put this team on his back. And instead, we're kind of stuck in this weird middle ground where he's sort of neither. And I don't quite know what the next step is for him. So even if the next period of his career isn't at Milan, I think there's pressure on him to think about and make the right decisions for his career so we can finally see that incredible talent unlocked once again. Because as you say, there have been periods in the last couple of years where he's suddenly just gone from being, you know, one of the hottest prospects on the planet to just being still very talented, but ultimately not quite cutting at the very top level kind of player.
Mm. This is all getting interesting. And we're seeing these like dynamic players crop up now. Obviously we had Phil Foden, you're talking about Rafa Leão, and these players like, and you start to think, okay, maybe these players have been overplayed or something. Maybe there's underlying problems here that are an ingrained problem within modern day football, and these are spoken about. And what I'm going to talk about at number three maybe begins to come into the same category, because my next player under pressure is Cole Palmer. Now, Palmer is obviously like shown himself to be a remarkable talent. And one of the things that I've always admired most about Cole Palmer is his incredible self-belief. And I thought that his own confidence in himself was unshakable. And I'm a little bit worried because this season I haven't seen him showing the same mannerisms. Now, Cole Palmer, in terms of coming under pressure, this is how we build it up. He's coming back from an injury, and it's a niggly injury, and he's also coming through a slump. So this is why he's under pressure. There's a groin problem that's niggled away. It was been a pretty significant problem, obviously, earlier in the season. It still seems to exist, but he's also going through a slump in terms of output. He's trying to prove that he's still as important to Chelsea as he was. And he's also trying to prove that he's a starter for England. Now, last season in the Premier League, Palmer's output was 15 goals and 9 assists. That was from 37 games. Right now, after 20 games, he's got 9 goals. He's only got 1 assist, Cole Palmer, this season. It's all a little bit strange. And what's alarming really is just like when you're watching the games, you just don't you don't really see him carrying himself in the same way. Now, I'm told that Cole Palmer himself is really frustrated with the recurring injury. Like, it's something that's obviously been there for a while now. And he's not only frustrated with that and the management of it, but also with how it has begun to affect his form, because he is so desperate to get back to where he was. So I think he's annoyed. I think he's annoyed with Chelsea's form. I think he's annoyed with his own form. I think he's annoyed with his own body. I think he's a bit annoyed with the people that are looking after his body. And I just don't know that we're seeing the carefree Cole Palmer that allowed for him to perform so nonchalantly at such a high level, which was what was the great thing about him. And that concerns me. And I'm also concerned that he is feeling pressure, and that actually is making him be a shadow of the player that he actually always has been. There have been rumours about Palmer potentially leaving Chelsea and that he's homesick and he misses Manchester. I think there's something in that too. I don't know that Cole Palmer's going to stay at Chelsea for years to come, if I'm totally honest. Right now, it doesn't really matter. What matters right now is that Palmer is able to somehow get himself back into top shape and in top form. And is that going to happen in the time frame that he's set himself, which is between now and the World Cup starting in June? I've really got my doubts.
I think I've got a bit more leeway for Palmer in this situation because he's part of a dysfunctional unit. Mm. And the way that it's playing out with Chelsea, where he's being kind of utilized to try and play different roles within the same game, where Chelsea just feel like they're a little bit all over the place right now, means that I probably do have a little bit more empathy. And actually, I think he's been probably rushed back a tad in the fact that they just didn't really know what to do without him in certain situations as well, which doesn't feel like the same kind of pressure. But I do think you're right in that Palmer was the talisman, right, of this Chelsea side. And we saw it, and that link up that we were talking about right at the start of the season, where him and Joao Pedro just were on each other's wavelength at such a beautiful rate. They were just making things stick, making it run. And we saw that in the Club World Cup. We saw it at the start of the season. And since, you know, they've come back in the second half, and I know that a lot of things have changed at Chelsea and that Palmer's position has been a little bit different. We've seen flashes of it. We saw it a little bit in the first half of that game against Leeds United before Chelsea had that second half collapse, where they were just on each other's wavelength, really in tandem, really in sync. And when that happens, I think that Chelsea look like a really good football side. And when it doesn't, everything else seems to fall apart as well. And that's a lot of pressure to put on a player. I absolutely take that, especially one who's still relatively young and, you know, has taken on the mantle of this team on his shoulders quite early. But also, he seemed to thrive off that pressure in seasons gone past. Not obviously in the same level with Joao Pedro because he wasn't there, but he seemed to thrive off being the main man. And right now, I think you're absolutely right in that he looks a shadow of that player who was willing to just sort of throw off the shackles and beat teams on his own for fun. And maybe that's part of, you know, growing up and also teams realizing how dangerous you can be and being double marked and triple marked and taken out of games. But the frustration with it all and some of the kind of hand gestures and throwing arms up in the air, etc., yeah, when passes don't go your way, just feels a lot different to what was happening with him slightly earlier on. And maybe that was just that he was in a more kind of successful and functional team, so that he wasn't kind of the guy and he didn't feel that pressure as much, which is fine. Like, that's a natural kind of development. But it does feel a little bit like the vibes are completely off. And that's weird to me, considering where we were, what, 8 months ago?
Yeah, and look, by the time Maresca left, like, Cole Palmer didn't feel like he had the freedom he once had. He wasn't playing, in the same way that he'd managed to get his best form. The problem is that they've changed coach and we're still not... Okay, he got a hat-trick recently, didn't he? Was it Wolves game? But... you expect that to be a moment with Cole Palmer that builds on a spell of goal, goal, assist, assist, goal, goal. Like, that's what we've become used to. It's not there. I don't know if it's coming.
Last year, Cole Palmer went through a little bit of a drought in terms of goals and assists. But at the time, I wasn't that worried because the underlying numbers were still really, really strong. And, you know, the fact that people weren't finishing the chances, etc., you were like, well, it's not necessarily his fault that these things aren't falling for him, or, you know, a penalty, that penalty miss at one point, you're like, ugh, it's just not working at the moment, but the performances are fine. I think that this is different. And that's why I think there's an interesting amount of pressure on Palmer here as well. Let me talk about a slightly different situation over in Spain at Atletico Madrid, but another player wearing the number 10. Alex Baena signed for Atleti for €42 million from Villarreal in July. And there was a lot of people, including me, very, very excited about this, because outside of Spain's big two, he'd been the most creative player in La Liga last year. It felt like such a natural fit on the left side of that midfield, in the same kind of pocket he played in for Villarreal, to tuck inside, and they'd have the width on the right, and he'd have Ruggeri, who'd also been signed, kind of bombing on down that side behind him and making things happen. And it just hasn't worked out at all for Alex Baena, I think, so far at Atleti. Now, he's only 24 years old. There's plenty of time here for this to work itself out. But I do think he's now under pressure to start delivering. And bear in mind, you know, when you saw his goal contributions last season, this year in 34 games in all comps for Atleti, he has 2 goals and 2 assists, which is not particularly good enough, I don't think, in terms of what it is. But maybe the most important bit is actually the lack of creativity. So last season, he created 21 big chances. It was about 3.1 key passes a game in La Liga for Villarreal last season. It's dropped to under half that, about 1.5 this season so far. It's really uncomfortable. He's played 90 minutes twice in his entire career at Atletico Madrid. So in those 34 games, he's been trusted to see out the 90 just twice. And when you're kind of looking at the big moments, the big games, you know, the Tottenham games in the Champions League, first leg on the bench for the entirety of it, second leg, 6 minutes off the bench. The Real Madrid game at the weekend, 18 minutes off the bench, in which case, you know, he drew a red card from Valverde, but that was more because I think Valverde hates him as opposed to anything else. So when you're looking at this in the context of the season, that's fine. And you can have a year to bed in and all of those things can happen, but his preferred role has already been taken. So obviously Ademola Lookman signs for Atleti in the January window. In the 15 or so games he's played for Atleti, 14 games, 5 goals, 4 assists. He's had a phenomenal impact. Like, started really hot and has come back to some really good form of late, I think, for Atleti as well. And his preferred position is a different style of left winger to what Baena provides, but very much in the same kind of area. And look, you can point to it and say, maybe he's going to play further forward. He always played as a second striker at Atalanta. Maybe next year with a 2 up top, he'll be the rotator with Alvarez. But I think that Simeone is going to want both of those players on the pitch at the same time, a lot of the time. And genuinely, I'm a little bit concerned for Baena that after one season, people might start to walk away from this. We've seen very little of the kind of capability and the ball playing ability he had last year at Villarreal once he's made this step up. Now, it's a heavy shirt to throw on, right? The 10 shirt. And especially after, you know, it was owned for, you know, many a year by Angelito Correa, who was such a brilliant servant to Atleti, both from starting positions and off the bench, who scored massively important goals for the club, and who I think was kind of waved off as a club legend before his move to Mexico. You kind of come back to it and you're watching Baena and you're like, that shirt looks big on you. And you're seeing other players step up at this point in the season. And look, Atleti have been a bit all over the place at times as well. But even in the good games for them, and there have been plenty of very impressive performances, it really hasn't been Baena who has stepped up to the plate. And I think that the problem with Simeone is if he decides that you're not capable of doing what he needs you to do within a system, you can be bombed out pretty quick. And I think we're getting towards a slightly dangerous place with Baena, that actually a lot of people are looking at him and thinking, I don't know if he's good enough to play for the club in this kind of capacity, if he's big enough for that step up, if he was ready for it. And I don't think it helps him that Alberto Moleiro, who's replaced him from Las Palmas to Villarreal, has had an excellent season wearing the shirt that Baena used to wear, doing the thing that Baena used to do, whereas he has really floundered in this situation. I think his pressure comes from the fact that someone has already been signed to play the same position as him, who has started like a train. Yes, Lookman's 4 years older. Yes, he was a bit more bang, ready for the spotlight, done it in the Champions League, done it under the bright lights. Fine, no bother. We've seen him score a hat-trick in the Europa League final. But I don't think that really helps out Baena right now, because he hasn't got 4 years to wait for Ademola Lookman to kind of decide that he's had enough at Atleti. This is Ademola Lookman's big chance to step into, you know, one of the biggest sides in Europe and become a key part of it. I'm a bit worried for Alex Baena, and I am a bit concerned that actually without the structures he had in place under Marcelino's very rigid system at Villarreal, we had a destroyer next to him, making sure that he was able to kind of lose the ball a number of times, the runners around him. It doesn't go through him all the time. And I think he's really struggling to adapt to the kind of rhythm of this side and the capabilities they have. And I don't love it, I'll be honest.
Yeah, and you did love this one when it went through. I remember. 100%. You know, I can remember this being one of your hot transfers. So disappointment from you, and he needs to pull his finger out for that alone, mate.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Right, who have you got at two before we take a little break?
Okay, at number two, I was already going to put this player in because he's a veteran Premier League star with his legacy on the line. So I already had this one set up, Jack. But today it's kicked on even further because Mo Salah is ending his Liverpool career after this season. It's a big announcement for Salah to do this, you know, during a season. I don't think it's a complete surprise. My concern for Salah that's been ongoing is that every bad performance, every average performance has just slightly tainted the way that we're going to remember him. So the pressure that I feel that Salah is under now is to just make sure that he gets at least one big moment to go out with a bang. Like, Liverpool fans adore him. They've continued to adore him. They've continued to sing his name throughout his difficulties this season. Look, he's had a strained relationship with Arne Slot. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We've seen signs of it before he went to AFCON. Obviously, they've patched things over, but I don't think it was ever any more than that, to be totally honest. I think that Salah's performances have been a reflection of the state of the team, but also the way that he's been used by the coach and possibly the way he's got on with the coach. Liverpool were saying it's time to fully celebrate his legacy and achievements, and all of that will follow across this year as he bids farewell to Anfield. You know, anyone that's watched Liverpool can appreciate what he's done for the club. I don't find Salah personally the easiest to watch in terms of, like, he doesn't massively entertain me. I don't get off my seat every time he picks up the ball like I might have done with Messi or Ronaldo or these sorts of players through the years. But it doesn't mean he's not a Premier League legend, because his numbers add up, his impact adds up. His professionalism, his dedication to his art is absolutely undeniable. And I've found it quite sad. I'm not sure we've seen a player of his caliber fall off a cliff in the way that he has this season. His numbers just aren't what they were compared to last season. And he's only 33. This isn't a player that's at 40. So it's been a strange year for him. But this is a different pressure, a new pressure. Do Liverpool fans get to see the best of Mo Salah once or twice before he hangs up that number 11 shirt?
I think what's really interesting about Salah, and look, whilst it hasn't been a brilliant season, he still has 10 goals, 9 assists in all competitions for a struggling Liverpool side. That's more than Bukayo Saka has in all competitions. It's more than Cole Palmer has in all competitions. It's more than Jeremy Doku has in all competitions, admittedly, you know, with some injuries. It's the same as Ryan Cherki has in all competitions in relatively similar numbers. Or Salah's about 200-300 minutes more. Those numbers for anyone else would still be kind of like low-key fine. He's still getting a goal contribution more than every two games that he plays, which is kind of wild considering some of the discourse, I think. But when you're coming off such an incredible season last time out, and I do think that you make a good point there in that he was always someone we talked about as kind of really being in the best shape, that the kind of father time debate wouldn't come to him at the same kind of time as it would to other players because of his incredible commitment to himself, to his team, to his fitness, to his workload, to all of the bits that, you know, go off the pitch. And I think that we've seen a Liverpool side that have been strange this year in many, many different ways. Now, I do think you're probably right in that it doesn't feel like there's the same kind of trust there with the management as there was last season. But it does feel to me, and I know obviously use this as the Cole Palmer debate and saying that he's part of a slightly dysfunctional unit, I think we're probably seeing something quite similar from Liverpool in terms of this has been a team that's, you know, supposed to re-gear this season. It's supposed to change its angle of attack. I talked about this a lot in the first half of the season. And yes, while there's been a fall off from both club and player here in terms of what they were putting up last season, it does feel like that move away from what they were putting together, the tiredness, all of the different aspects of this, the fact that the squad felt imbalanced, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, has just affected everybody in certain senses, maybe with the exception of Hugo Ekitike, who's had a good season to begin with. But I think when you're kind of talking about Salah, you're expecting, and we have been expecting for so many years now, this level of just unbelievable proficiency, of consistency, of effectiveness in front of goal. And the eye test doesn't add up in the same way that it has before. So you can use these stats and you can talk about them and talk about the fact that, you know, he's had a better season than all of these players. But I think if you asked him about it, he would be pretty disappointed. And maybe that's, I think, where the pressure comes from here, rather than it coming from Liverpool, because I don't think his legacy is in doubt whatsoever, if I'm honest. And I don't think it would have mattered kind of what happened this season if his legacy ever would have been in doubt for what he's done for the club. What I do think is that he will put an inordinate amount of pressure on himself to showcase why he still thinks he's one of the best players in the world, one of the talisman of this football club, and whatever happens next. I don't think any of that matters for his Liverpool legacy. But I do think that he will want to prove that he is still capable of doing this at the highest level. And for me, this pressure is different because it definitely 100% comes from within in a way that I don't know if some of the other players we've discussed would pile that pressure on themselves.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
All right, let's do my last number two and then we'll take a break and do our ones at the top. My number two, I've got Marcus Thuram. Ooh. Marcus Thuram is having a weird year. Now, he's got 12 goals in 36 games, which is not terrible by any stretch of the imagination. But he's got one goal in his last 16 games in all competitions. One goal in 2026. And I think there's pressure here from the fact that in the absence of Lautaro Martinez, who's obviously picked up an injury and been absent for a little while now for Inter, we've seen Pio Esposito step into that gap. We've seen him become a really important goal threat. We've seen him be a creator this season. And to be honest, his numbers don't stack up in the same way. But I think the performances and what we're seeing from a young Italian homegrown star suggests to me that we're kind of looking at a player here that is going to be part of this Inter side for a little while. Now, obviously, he's been off on loan. He was very good at Spezia, but he's come back in and shown that I think he's ready for the top level physically. He's ready for the top level when it comes to stepping up and potentially performing for his national team in a big international break for them coming up in front of us. I think that he has basically showcased that I'm here and I'm ready. And I think that that is bad news for Marcus Thuram. Now, there's a €75 million release clause and there is interest in Marcus Thuram. We've seen Newcastle United linked. Look, I said last summer that the player I would have picked to go and replace Alexander Isak was Marcus Thuram. I think there's going to be interest from a club like Aston Villa, who have a little bit more to wiggle room when it comes to the transfer budget this summer and where they are from a wage structure perspective. I think it's going to be a lot of clubs who are kind of on the verge of Champions League football who are looking at this and thinking, that's a striker that I want in my ranks, someone who can stretch a pitch, because at his best, he is a fearsome striker. He is a relentless runner. He scores important goals. He can do everything, a little bit of the air, a little bit in behind. I really, really like him as a player. But you're coming to this moment and thinking, are you going to be the main man for France this summer? Because I don't think so. I don't think that they're going to rely on you all that much. Even if Kylian Mbappe has shifted back out to the wing, I don't think it's going to be you that leads the line through the middle. You're not really the main man at Inter right now. And we always kind of knew that was the Thuram-Lautaro partnership. And I think he did a wonderful job stepping in for Romelu Lukaku and kind of taking the mantle on at that moment. And Inter have been brilliant for so many years. And it's worth pointing out that Marcus Thuram has been brilliant for a number of those years as well. But I just wonder, with the pressure coming in from behind, from Pio Esposito, with the pressure that when Lautaro returns, the club captain is going to expect to play, and they really, really desperate to have him back after a little bad run of form, the fact that there has been this barren spell, which, you know, he hasn't scored since February, I don't think. There's one goal in 2026, but I don't think he's scored since February, and very early February as well. And there's interest. I think Inter are the kind of club that would be like, we have backups here. We have backups that we trust. We have Pio Esposito coming through, who might be a leading light for us for 10 years. I think we might sell. And that puts a pressure on him in that, you know, maybe he doesn't want to be playing for some of these clubs. Maybe he does. This is no slight on Villa or Newcastle or any of those. And I think that they would be great landing spots for someone like Marcus Thuram. And it would be a real coup for those clubs. But he's been playing in Champions League finals in the last couple of years. He's been winning Scudettos. Neither of those clubs are going to offer that in the same kind of way. And obviously there might be more interest. There might be plenty, you know, of different clubs who want to get involved. I don't think anyone's going to get near to that 75 million euro release clause.
No.
Get him out of there. And I do wonder if there's just a pressure on him to showcase why he should still be the main man next summer. Can he have a run of goals here that propels Inter over the line to this title, that maybe wins them a Coppa Italia? And actually he goes, you know what? You all wrote me off because I had a bad spell in January and February. I think that pressure on him is to be like, I want to stay at this club. I want to fight for my place. I want to be the main man in this partnership. I've got to go and earn that. That's a big pressure, I think, with a lot of kind of different elements in the equation coming up behind him.
I love that, mate. That end bit, I think you should send to him. I think that would be all he needs to motivate himself. So to go for it. That was a great little speech.
There you go. There you go. Motivational Jack out in full force. Right, we're going to take a break there. When we come back on the other side, we're going to pick our number one each to round this off. Make sure you stick with us. You're on Ranks FC. Welcome back for the final time to today's Ranks FC. Jack Collins and Dean Jones here with one player left each to speak about. Dean, who's your number one player under pressure for the rest of this season?
Well, I'll tell you what, given the Mo Salah news, this one actually stretches beyond this season because I already had him at number one, but now he's definitely number one. It's Florian Wirtz. Like, he was under pressure already. Now he's really under pressure because he has to step up and show that he can be the player that Liverpool wanted to be. When they signed him for a club record deal of £116 million. Now, the biggest type of pressure you can ever have in football is a massive price tag. So when you're joining one of the biggest clubs in the land as one of the most exciting young talents in the world, for a figure like that, the pressure's undeniable. And so far, Florian Wirtz has struggled to live up to the price tag, the instant expectations. Again, partly I put it down to Arne Slot. Maybe I, to be honest, put a lot of it down to Arne Slot. I don't feel he's accommodated him as well as he could. I don't feel he's used him as well as he could. But still, there is some sense of this that has to fall onto the shoulders of Florian Wirtz to get himself to the level that was expected of him when he joined from Bayer Leverkusen. This is a player that's wanted by Bayern Munich, was wanted by Manchester City, is still regarded as one of the most exciting, creative players you could possibly have in your team. But we just haven't seen it at the level we would have expected so far. And as I say, with the Mo Salah news coming out now, Liverpool fans will want to see this. And I think Florian Wirtz is under new pressure to show he can do it. Because the next thing that comes along is who replaces Mo Salah? Who's the new talisman of Liverpool? Now, obviously, they've still got Alex Isak waiting in the wings. They've got Ekitike. They've got umpteen players that still have...
Szoboszlai, right?
Szoboszlai. But there will still be an expectation that Mo Salah is replaced. But Wirtz has to be like, no. This is me. This is my time. And that's why this is a level of pressure that increases right now. And it's not just about the next seven games. It's not just about whether he gets a trophy in this season and can make a game-changing moment in this season. But it is a massive stepping stone to getting to where he is expected to be for the duration of his Liverpool career. This guy needs to become a superstar at Liverpool. I still think he will be. I still think he can be that. But he's got to start doing it because while we've seen flashes of it, the consistency of performance hasn't been there.
Yes and no. Like, as in, I still think that people were super quick to judge Florian Wirtz on kind of the numbers because obviously he racked those up at Bayer Leverkusen. And I think that a lot of those opening performances where people were very, very loud about what Florian Wirtz was doing, people weren't watching Florian Wirtz play football, right? Like, I think it was just like, oh, he hasn't scored or got an assist again today. I've watched the highlights and therefore I haven't really seen what Florian Wirtz is actually doing. And there are moments. I mean, look, in the last couple of games, I think just to pull in a couple of examples, I saw a stat from Squawker at the time that was like Florian Wirtz created 8 chances against Galatasaray, which was the most by a Liverpool player in the Champions League in one game in the last 10 seasons. But I think against Brighton at the weekend, despite the fact that Liverpool were really poor for most of that game, Florian Wirtz was one of the few players who could stand up afterwards and be like, you know what? I've done things in that game. I've actually performed to a level that people would expect of me. But I think you are right in that actually a lot of this season has been about that changing of the guard in terms of the way that Liverpool operate. And someone like a Dominic Szoboszlai, who feels like an incredibly technically gifted footballer, but also someone who can do the hard yards and the running, has become Liverpool's best player this season because I think they're a little bit stuck between stations in what they want to be. Now, we're about to enter a period where Liverpool's managerial future is up in the air again, which I think is going to be interesting. And what happens with that is going to be something that Florian Wirtz will obviously, you know, his impact will be impacted by. And whether that is, you know, a Xabi Alonso coming back in and becoming the guy who already, you know, brought the best out of him and doing it again at a different club. Sure. Like all of these things can play into it, but he's got a couple of games now where he has to really step up and take a bit of more of the scruff of the neck of these. And look, it's massively important for Liverpool on quite a lot of senses, right? Because, you know, it feels a bit Champions League qualification or bust. Like, yes, okay, they might end up with an FA Cup semi-final at Wembley and look, potentially a final with that. All of those things matter. But I think qualification for next season's Champions League is kind of the minimum requirement at this point. And look, maybe Liverpool pulls something out of the fire and they go and win the Champions League. It wouldn't be the weirdest thing to happen in the world. But based on the last few performances, I think you struggled to see it. And kind of the lack of consistency suggests to me that maybe that's not the case. But you know, it's a knockout competition. Weirder things have happened. But I think despite the fact that I think Florian Wirtz has had a pretty decent season in terms of coming in and hitting the ground running and becoming part of a new team, playing in different positions, not necessarily being in his preferred spot. Fine, all of those things. But if you are someone, as you point out, with that price tag on your head, you've got to deliver at some point and have those big moments. And I think those big moments have perhaps been the thing that's been lacking. Can he have a few of those in the back end of this season so that he can hit the ground running next year and kind of step up to be the guy? Well, I think that's a big, big ask, but it's also one of those things that would just change the picture on Liverpool almost completely.
What would change the picture even more would be if Xabi Alonso stepped in as the next manager, because I think that certainly something that Wirtz would be open to. I think we'll leave it at that, but I think Wirtz would certainly be likely to flourish under a change of manager and might give him a new lease of life.
Yes, I think that's probably a fair look at it, I think, in this way. All right, I'm going to come to my number one. And my number one, Dean, is a goalkeeper, which I wasn't necessarily expecting to put into this, but it's Lucas Chevalier at PSG. So they made a huge, huge call in terms of what happened last summer after winning the Champions League. They let Gianluigi Donnarumma, who'd been the hero of that Champions League campaign, leave the club. Now, at the time I spoke about this, we spoke about the fact that it was kind of low-key understandable. His kind of concentration over the course of a league season had been questioned. His ability to play out of the back had been questioned a little bit. And Chevalier had a wonderful, wonderful season at Lille and looked like the kind of next one up on this French production line of excellent goalkeepers. But in recent weeks in Chevalier, we've seen him dropped from the team, dropped to the bench behind Safonov, who has been made clear it does not feel like the long-term number one. We haven't seen him start in the league since the last weekend of January, and he hasn't started in the Champions League since even before that, in the 2-1 loss to Sporting. So he's lost his place completely. He has spent his time on the bench and has really struggled. You know, he came back in, for example, for the game against Paris FC in the cup, and they lost that game 1-0. It really hasn't been a good opening season for him. Now, I don't know how much he's going to be able to do or be given the opportunity to do on the pitch. But at this point, after a big name arrival to replace, you know, one of the biggest names in the goalkeeping world, this has been, I think, nothing short of a real disappointment. Mm. And we're now at a point where Chevalier has got to show probably in training, right? Like, because I don't know how many opportunities he's going to get in training, that he has the capability to move forward and to grow with this PSG team, which, look, still is quite young and still has a different kind of aspect to it to kind of move forward. But actually, there's already a load of things about him leaving in the summer, not happy as the number two, looking for a new destination, PSG exploring options to see who might replace him. Now, whether those things happen or not, he's got to find something here that showcases, one, that he's, you know, still capable of making it to the top level, where a lot of people thought he was. And he's also been called up into the France squad, despite losing his spot. But he's been told by Deschamps that he's going to be the number three, right? Like, he's not going to be the number one goal. Now, I don't think he would have walked in and been like, I'm going to play in front of Mike Maignan. Fair enough, right? But, like, to come in there and be like, oh, you're number two at your club, you're number three here, that's a dangerous place for a keeper to be, because we see this quite regularly with goalkeepers, in the, you know, they start off their careers as number ones, they make a move, they end up getting dropped, and then they sort of make a name for themselves as a number two goalkeeper. And It becomes a strange thing. Now, at the moment, it's happened to Kepa Arrizabalaga, right? Who is still the most expensive goalkeeper in history. So it can happen to anyone, regardless of your price tag, regardless of the quality you had, the caliber that they thought you were capable of possessing. It doesn't mean that it's, you know, necessarily a bad thing, but I don't think that's what Chevalier is looking for at this point. At 24 years old, tipped as, you know, the next great French keeper, you've got to find a way of either showcasing your ability or also working in the background to find the next club that is going to give you that space to showcase what you're capable of. And that, for me, I think is an incredible pressure, because it's off-field and on-field things together. And I think that this season has been such a damaging one for him, you know, and you know, there's very little kind of forgiveness in the PSG fan base. You know, when you make a couple of mistakes, you're not good enough, you're replacing someone of the caliber of Donnarumma, who led the club to their first ever, you know, Champions League title. I think this is a really difficult situation for Lucas Chevalier, and how he deals with it, how he applies himself, what this looks like in training, what this looks like when he's with the French squad. All of these things are going to come into account when, you know, the next club come calling, or when the next season comes calling. All of these things are going to matter. And how he conducts himself now, that's an incredible amount of pressure in a situation you just did not want to be in at this point in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good example of someone that is under pressure for sure. Hasn't helped himself really by looking unsteady/nervous at times when... you just want your goalkeeper to stand tall and assert authority. And I don't think he's necessarily done that at all times across this season. And I think that there are improvements that would have been expected there. So it doesn't surprise me that even internally he's come under pressure in that sense. But you would imagine, given his age and being a goalkeeper, like, it takes time often to assert yourself, and goalkeepers take longer to hit their prime and to show what they're fully capable of. We know he's good. We've seen him on every stage show what he's capable of so far. It's just making sure that your mentality doesn't dip, because you have to stay. Of all the positions, you've got to stay right up there. We see what happens if you doubt yourself. You know, Kinski, for example, goes into the Tottenham game. You know, if there's an inch of doubt, as soon as that starts to get in there, like, you're done. And so Chevalier, I would expect to be more of a mentality monster, to be honest, given where he's expected to go in his career. And if he's going to reach it, he's got to bounce back from it and show he can deal with that sort of pressure.
Also, you know, there might be a situation here, especially with PSG still competing on multiple fronts, where he's given the opportunity to step back in between the sticks. It might be one opportunity. He has to be ready to take that, to fire, to be absolutely like 100% locked in for that. Now, we don't know that that's going to be the case, but it wouldn't surprise me given the amount of competitions that they have to play in. And, you know, they're going to have Champions League games. Lyon's already said that their game between the two Champions League games, where they're meant to be playing PSG at the weekend, they're not moving it. They want to, you know, make sure that game is played at that moment to respect the integrity of the competition, in inverted commas, I think, to probably take advantage of the fact that PSG are playing, you know, big games either side of it, is probably more likely. But look, that's them, and they're within their rights to do so. I just find it really interesting that, you know, if he is given that nod, he needs to be so ready. And that's such a difficult thing to do if you're already frustrated about the fact that you've been bombed out of the team. So Yeah, I think he's got a lot of pressure on him now, and it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to it.
Yep, absolutely. That was good fun, wasn't it? I think we had a good little chat there, mate.
I think we did indeed, mate. That was a lot of fun and a lot of big stories to consider over the rest of this season. But with that, I think we are going to call this a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever. As we say, we'll be back next week talking some World Cup bits, although it will come slightly later on with a release date because of the way that those games shake out. But we will be back with you to talk all things World Cup. We're looking forward to it already, and we'll see you all very shortly, Rank Squad. Take it easy. Peace.